Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I'm bidding a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, all you traders and investors, and welcome to this Friday, February 3rd edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel, here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. Today's show, real quick, brought to you by Chaikin Analytics with their groundbreaking stock research tools, including the proven Chaikin Power Gauge Rating and Stock Discovery Engine. Chaikin Analytics simplifies complex investment decisions, and it's all presented in an easy-to-understand platform. To learn more, visit chaikinanalytics.com/premarket. That's Chaikin, C-H-A-I-K-I-N, analytics.com/premarket. I'm putting the link in the chat right about now. We got a great slate of guests for you folks today. At first at 8:15, we're going to have Seth Marin on the line. He is the author of a new book, The Power of Positive Destruction, How to Turn a Business Idea into a Revolution. But also, Dennis knows him as the founder and CEO of LiquidNet, which is a dark pool, and Dennis says he is one of the experts on market, if not the expert on market structure. So Seth is on at 8:15, and then at 8:35, we're going to be joined by Arthur Hill. He is the senior technical analyst at StockCharts.com, and then also potentially we'll have Anne-Marie on, Anne-Marie Band, at 9 a.m. So full show today, and we got to cover Amazon. We got to cover all the movers from yesterday. So we'll get right to Joel. Joel, how are we doing in the market this morning?
We're doing well, Spencer. The S&Ps are trading up 3 points at 78.50. Made a high at 80.50. So that's our bogey on the upside because Thursday's high was right there as well. Coming on the downside, the pre-market low is 20.70.50. Not a whole lot there. We have three lows at the 22.63 area. Looking at the crude oil market, we have crude trading up 12 cents, still trying to make a clean break above that $54 level that is posed as resistance. Also, moving over to the gold and silver market, they are lower here ahead of the jobs number. We have gold trading down nearly $7 and silver off by a dime. So, Dennis, I've never heard you so excited for an 8:15 guest, I think, since we've been doing the show.
Oh, Seth Marin is awesome. So pumped up to interview Seth there at 8:15 Eastern from LiquidNet. I mean, this guy is this guy's founder of LiquidNet, which is, you know, an institutional dark pool where two institutions could come together to cross their orders. And, you know, he's a revolutionary in this industry, and it's going to be very exciting to talk to him at 8:15.
All right. Let's get a lot of earnings to cover ahead of that.
Let's jump into the big ones of them all. And you know what? I'm trading there last night and analyzing. And, you know, you're seeing Amazon get hit. And you're starting to see Amazon bring down a lot of other stocks. You're seeing, you know, GoPro get hit. You're seeing a lot of big stocks get hit. And then you start analyzing it. And what's going to bring the market up? Because the S&Ps aren't selling off. You know there's going to be a sector that brings the market back. Sure enough, you come here this morning and the financials are flying. So there's always a sector that picks up the slack. But let's jump over to the Amazon earnings here just for a second. AMZ. Zebra and Spencer, how did they do?
Yeah, Amazon yesterday, Q4 EPS $1.54 versus $1.35, sales of $43.7 billion versus $44.68 billion, so a miss there on the sales number. They do see Q1 sales at $33.25 to $35.75 billion. That's in line with the $36 billion, actually a little lower than the $36 billion estimate. They do see operating income in Q1 at $250 to $900 million. That's a large range, but apparently pretty normal for Amazon. And they missed despite a 22% increase in sales in Q4.
Stock is trading down 35 points here this morning, so it is a significant hit here for Amazon, 4%. Joel, technical levels, what do you got for us?
801. 801 stands as your pre-market low, I believe. Getting a little bit of a bounce. I see a bounce to 812.50, so those are your early ranges. You got to look in the lower 800s here. You had a series of 4-5 lows. We're trading below, though, at the 805 area. Maybe psychological $800 level as well. You fall through 800, though, Dennis, things are pretty open between 790 and 800. And just a quick note on this one. It got hit after its last earnings report, and it sold off from 840 down to 710. It battled all the way back here, and now it looks like we have a rinse and repeat here, not liking the earnings.
Yeah, and it's bringing down other stocks, and you know, just the sympathy play. If you go to FANG itself, you can see Facebook actually has bounced back. It was trading down over a dollar last night, isn't down nearly as much there now. Netflix not really participating as much with FANG. I've noticed that even off of the Google earnings recently, that Netflix really wasn't participating. And Google's actually trading up, so I guess, you know, last night it was, but you know, everything comes back by the dips. Everybody's, you know, coming back up here, and Google's trading higher now too. So maybe Amazon isn't bringing down as much. But I tell you, retail overall might be weak too, because it wasn't only Amazon that disappointed. Yet another retail stock, Deckers, which is getting decked. It is down 20% here in the pre-market, down 11 points. Deckers, Spencer, how do they do?
Sorry, I got distracted reading Seth Marin's bio, so I apologize.
We're all pumped for Seth Marin.
I
focus,
apologize.
All right,
okay,
focus.
I'm focused. Q3 adjusted EPS, $4.11 to $4.24. Sales of $760 million versus $788 million, so they missed on the EPS. They missed on the sales. They do see Q4 adjusted EPS at a 10-cent loss to a break-even, and they see sales down 5 to 6%.
Is there a retail stock just getting massacred every day, Joel? I mean, yesterday Ralph Lauren lost 10 points. It seems like this earnings season there's always a retailer that's getting the beats. And today it looks like the choice is Deckers here. But this just, you know, sector is in so much trouble. And you start looking here and you think, well, now there's probably going to be some sympathy moves here too. Nike's trading down the pre-market. You can think Lululemon. But I'm looking, you know, at stocks that are trading down here today, and it's almost all retailers. So if I'm already, you can already kind of see the separation here. Financial strong, retailers weak. You know, that's where, you know, I'm already focusing for my trading here at the open. But jump over here at Deckers, give us some levels on DECK and what you really think the stock's at, Joel.
Well, you do have a hint of a rounding bottom here. Pre-market low is 42.20. Back in February a year ago of 2016, we had a low at 41.96. So we'll see if that hold has support. If not, man, you're getting into some open territory. Half and whole numbers down to 40, but least a buyer lurking at the $42 level as of right now.
That's a big level. I'll give you that, too. And just looking, you know, 2016, the double bottom down there. So I'll give you that as well. Although we saw Ralph Lauren rally nicely off of its, you know, and if we just look at the pre-market trading for Ralph Lauren yesterday, they're saying, rally, what are you talking about? But actually, Ralph Lauren got down to that 77, 78 area, opened up at 81. And then it tanked. So then I ended up closing near the lows there. But retailers are just in a world of hurt. It's going to take a lot. It's going to take – I don't know how they're going to pull this around here, because they did it before. I mean, beginning of last year, all the retailers were getting hit hard. And then in the spring, they started to buy them. And actually, a lot of them got a little bit of a lift. But long term here, I mean, you look at a Ralph Lauren. Back in 2015, it was almost $200 stock. Now it's $76. You know, look at Macy's long term, $73. Now it's $30. You can look, you know, at the Deckers, DECK. Not as bad. You got to go back to 2011 to find the highs in Deckers, actually, when it was $118. But now it's $43. I mean, your average, you know, retailer that, you know, actually got physical stores is down, it seems like, 50 to 60 to 70%, depending on which one it is. And you say, hey, you know, if I'm a long-term investor, isn't there some good value here? And yeah, there's some value, but we just don't know going forward how much, you know, is going to be, you know, the new shopper we're saying is doing a lot of online shopping. It's very expensive to run a store there. And you could say, oh, well, if sales go down 10%, well, why does the stock go down 70%? Because the margins, when sales go down 10%, a lot of these stores can actually lose profitability. So, you know, it's a big deal when Amazon eats 10 or 15% of your sales. So that's why, you know, you see these stores continue to get hit. Deckers is your latest one to get hit today.
Yeah, check your early earnings calendar for any other retailers going on. The trend has not been the friend here down in the retailers.
The one thing I will say is you probably have some Johnny-come-latelys now starting to put on some pretty good shorts in the sector. So a lot of times what you see is early in, you know, and we're going to get into retailer earnings season later on, but you'll see 3, 4, 5 retailers report, they all get hit. Then everybody's like, oh, I'm going to go short in the reports. And then what starts happening is they start missing, but they actually start buying. buying them because they're crowded trades to the downside. So you just got to analyze how crowded the trades are. I think we're still fairly early here, but as you get later into the earnings season, as you know, if you're a late retailer reporting, sometimes you can actually be a beneficiary, even if you're late to report. You've already been hit probably with sympathy on a lot of your other reports, and then you can see actually a stock rally on a weak report. That's how that happens when the trade gets crowded to the short side.
Hey, Dennis, take a look at the XRT. That's the S&P retail ETF. I mean, doesn't seem to be reflecting that, you know, I'm going to have to take a look and dig into what the components are, but looks like it hit a high. This is a monthly chart here. It hit a high in 2015 at 51.25. We're down at 43, so I'd be interesting. Maybe it has like your Home Depots or your Lowe's or something in there. But
very, very diversified is the XRT. There's not a lot of heavy, but you know the heaviest weighting, actually, believe it or not, is Netflix, 1.71%. So
really?
You know, you start analyzing. Yeah, I know. You look at the retail index. I guess Netflix is a retailer, but it's got stocks like Costco in there. Costco's right near an all-time high. That helps out. It's got a stock like Priceline in there. That helps out too. Amazon is a big weighting in there. But, you know, it's very diverse. There's a ton of stocks. There are a lot of them 1% to 2%. So just looking at, you know, the top components. So when you got the Netflixes and the Amazons and the Costcos and the TripAdvisors and the Pricelines, there is enough diversification in there that, you know, some of these stocks are actually near or trading near all-time highs.
And you caught a nice trade off Walmart yesterday, right, on the Costco news.
And I said it on the show, and we did say, you know, sometimes, you know, even a broken clock tells the right time twice a day, right, Joel? But
yeah.
Costco, you know, I've seen this in the past at Walmart. When Costco has a big move, Walmart sometimes has a sympathy move. And Costco yesterday obviously had the good sales there that they reported for last month. And Walmart was sitting there trading flat in the pre-market. And believe it or not, I actually came in short Walmart. And I was like, you know what? I need to cover this. It was just coincidental. I wasn't because of Costco sales. I just had a hedge on. So I covered my Walmart short. And then I turned around and got long. So I turned around and got long at the open. It opened right at the low at 66.35. And within like 2 minutes, you know, I was already up 40 cents on the trade. And I started selling at 66.75, 66.85, and sold the rest of them at 67.05. So great trade for me on Walmart. You know, I love picking up, you know, 0.5% to 1% on a big, thick beta stock like that, because that's a big move for a stock like Walmart.
Bob Oyer has a question for you, Dennis. Are you familiar with the symbol JE, Just Energy Group?
Canadian stock?
Yeah, he says it's based in Canada, and it's in...
Oh, it is. No, it's U.S. It's got a symbol here, too, though, so
right,
we can look at
right.
it here.
He said it's
J-E.
Based in Canada, and...
I do not follow this company at all, Just Energy, cool ticker symbol, but I don't follow it. 6.34% dividend looks a little bit attractive there, but no, I don't know anything about this company. All I can tell you, technically, it's been coming back.
Is it a cool ticker symbol because it's my initials? Is that why you said that?
I didn't even catch that.
All right.
J.E., you should get in there and get this for your IPO there, Joel.
$6. that's what I would say, Bob Wire. $594 was your high in January. $597 your high, well, just a little into February. Closed up near that level. I'm not sure there's a seller lurking around at $6, but need to break above $6, and you got some open real estate there, Bob.
One more earnings report before we get to Seth Meyrin. GoPro, GPRO, let's jump into their earnings. Spencer's sitting there. He's waiting and raring to go. What GoPro have to do? What do they say, Spencer?
Q4 adjusted EPS, 29 cents versus 22 cent estimate. So a nice beat on that. Sales of 540.621 million versus 574.5. So a slight... a little more than a slight miss there. They see Q1 revenue at 200 million plus or minus 10 million versus a $264.5 million estimate. So they missed big on the Q1 rev guidance.
Short squeeze officially over, Joel.
Yeah, street leaning the wrong way on this one. There was some rumors, I believe, about GoPro a week or so ago. It made a new high for the move yesterday, just above $11, 10.97 close. Now all those longs are getting flushed out here, trading at 9.55. Looking at the dailies here, I see some lows in the lower $9 handle. Actually, back in January, had 6, 7, 8 lows between 9.02 and 9.20. So not quite where the pre-market low is, but I think if you do get into the lower nines here, you may see some buying interest.
8:15, we're going to take our first break, and we'll be back with Seth Meyrin from Liquinet.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.
Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep, brought to you by Chaikin Analytics. I'm Spencer Israel, here with Joel Elkanin and Dennis Dick, and we're on the line with a new guest, Seth Merrin. He is the author of The Power of Positive Destruction, How to Turn a Business Idea into a Revolution, and he's also the founder and CEO of LiquidNet. Seth, thanks for joining us this morning. How's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for having me.
Good, good, good. So tell us exactly, how do you turn a business idea into a revolution? How does one do that?
Well, you know, in the chapters, it is basically all of the lessons that I've learned over the 30 years that I've been in business condensed into just a few of the tips that I wish that I had when I first started out in business. And it starts with, what is your idea? What's the big idea? What's the idea that hasn't been solved by somebody else or hasn't been solved well enough? There's so many things out there, and the way that I started my career is there's a chapter in the book called WTF. And, you know, on Wall Street, I thought that everything was highly automated, you know, very technologically advanced. And when I got there, everything was basically written down on paper tickets. And I said, what is that? You know, computers can do this so much more easily and without so many errors, and it could take out tremendous amounts of costs. And it was just by saying WTF and putting some technology in place of the paper. It's very similar to what Quicken did with paper with checks. Today, every asset manager around the world uses what I invented, which is an order management system.
Seth, I'm a huge fan of yours. Dennis Dick here from Bright Trading, and just wanted to get, you know, your background on how, you know, you got into starting LiquidNet itself, because, you know, this obviously revolutionized the industry where you've got institutional orders coming together and crossing with each other as opposed to an institution trying to come into the market, you know, having a big footprint, and obviously the price moving away from them. Talk about, you know, what made you start LiquidNet and how you got started with it.
It was another WTF moment. So having been in the industry, I knew that back in 1981, at the start of the really big bull market, the pension funds and the mutual funds together, all the assets that were managed by institutional asset managers, totaled about $250 billion. And 30 years later, they had grown 40 times. The institutionally managed assets are now at about $13 to $15 trillion. And there had never been a marketplace that kept up with the fact that there's now a whole bunch of huge big box retailers, in effect. There's never been a wholesale market. Everybody still had to go to the exchanges, which were totally fine for retail trading. But when they handle 250 shares at a shot, and an institution has to buy a million shares because they manage, you know, billions of dollars of assets, of course, you know, if Walmart has to go to the corner grocery to buy all of their vegetables, that's absurd. It would never happen. Yet all these institutions that managed billions of dollars had to go to the exchange to buy millions of shares, 250 shares at a time, and of course. Yeah, there's no fooling supply-demand imbalance, and that's exactly what they created, and that's what moves the market against institutions. So when I started, there was a whole industry out there that simply measured how much the institutions moved the market every time they traded, and it added up to about $100 billion a year tax on everybody's returns that invest their money with those mutual funds and the pension funds. And a $100 billion a year problem is a problem that should be solved, yet up until that point, everybody just looked at it as a cost of doing business. And I said, well, this is something that has to be solved, and why don't we just take an example from other industries and create this wholesale market so that institutions can trade among themselves in size without the fear of creating that supply-demand imbalance, without the fear of creating leakage that also moves the market against them. And obviously, our customer base, our prospect base, was very well educated as to what the problem was. So we had a very willing prospect base to go after, and obviously we've been very successful.
How does LiquidNet actually work? So, you know, you have an institution coming in and wanting to buy 250,000 shares. How does LiquidNet help them out?
Well, it starts with hooking into the order management system. LiquidNet is, in essence, a global stock exchange for institutions. It's a global B2B exchange. And what we needed to do was create a critical mass of liquidity on day one. So where is that liquidity? It's all contained in the order management system that I had invented in my previous life. So every order to buy and sell is in that order management system. So what we had to do is we connected seamlessly into the order management system. And we said to the prospects and to our customers, hey, if you want to solve this problem, every order that comes into your firm should come into LiquidNet seamlessly. You don't have to do a thing. And we'll have lots of different asset managers around the world who are doing the same thing. And if there's a buy and sell order of similar size, we will alert you, sort of like eBay. And then it's up to you to decide if you want to negotiate, and then you can use our negotiating tools to negotiate anonymously between you. You have no idea what the actual size is that you're negotiating, but you know that if there's a match there, it's of the size, it's of comparative size. So then they negotiate, and they negotiate within the bid and the offer at the time. And when they arrive on the price, and normally it's just the midpoint, then they hit accept. And we tell them we execute as much as we can possibly execute. So if one person wants to buy 500,000 shares and another person wants to sell 1,000,000 shares, of course, we'll execute 500,000 shares.
Seth, let's jump into just a little bit more market structure talk with you, because I enjoy talking market structure with you. And, you know, the markets you've been around for so long have evolved so much, like you said. You know, and now we're looking at, you know, high frequency trading, trading up to 50 or 60%, you know, of the volume and of the quotes. I think they're a lot more than that now. You know, there's aspects of high frequency trading that are probably good for the market, probably bad for the market. But can you just give us your thoughts here, you know, on how the markets have evolved, you know, and into high frequency trading, and, you know, what your thoughts is on whether high frequency trading seems to help or hurt the overall market?
Sure. So, we're a very global company, and we meet with regulators all over the world. And the two most recent entrants into market structure are high-frequency trading and dark pools. And those are the two main points that the regulators around the world are taking a very, very close look at, and rightly so. Because anytime before high-frequency traders came in, the market was really a place for investors. Retail and institutional investors did all the volume. High-frequency traders, capturing more than 50% of the volume, changes the entire market dynamics out there, so that high-frequency traders are not interested in the underlying fundamentals of the company. They don't care about management. They don't care what the business is. They care about anomalies in the market pricing itself. Now, not all high-frequency trading is bad, so some of it actually helps smooth out the volatility in the marketplaces and takes advantage of little arbitrages, which actually makes the market more efficient. But there's a lot of high-frequency trading strategies out there that simply take advantage of the market's inefficiency. And all too often on Wall Street, there are very few people that make a lot of money at the expense of very many. And so when there is a supply-demand imbalance in the marketplace, and high-frequency traders can sense that because that's what their computers are trained to sense, then they go in and they buy ahead of whoever is creating that supply-demand imbalance. And more frequently than not, it's the institutions that are investing their money on behalf of all the pension fund holders and mutual fund investors. So that taking advantage of a very large constituency that does not help the market, and I think that that's bad. And the regulators are taking a very close look at that, and they're saying, in a number of countries, High-frequency traders are taking advantage of virtually all the bandwidth. So when you say that they're more than 50% of the quote, that's true, because they keep on, you know, putting quotes out there and taking them back very, very quickly. And that takes up a tremendous amount of bandwidth. And what regulators are now saying is, hey, if you guys are taking up all the bandwidth, you should start paying for that. And once they start paying for that, that takes some of the profitability out of the high-frequency trading, and that slows it down and that weakens it, and that's where the regulators should step in. So the bottom line is that not all high-frequency trading is bad, but a lot of it should not be allowed on the markets.
What about dark pools? Because, you know, liquid net is kind of what you think, you know, when you have 250,000 share orders coming in. You know, that's the way, you know, I think a dark pool should run, with the big orders, so, you know, institutions don't have as much price impact in the market. But you see a lot of smaller dark pools now, and you see a lot of orders, you know, even in off-exchange trading, getting siphoned off 100 shares here, 100 shares here going dark. Do you think that impairs price discovery when you start taking all the little stuff off from the public market?
And that's exactly what the regulators around the world are focusing on. So dark pools were created for institutional trading, for large block trading, not for retail trading. And, you know, in the United States, there are 40 dark pools, and there are obviously many more around the world. Once the regulators started shining a light on what's going on in those dark pools, they found, you know, some funny things happening. First of all, a lot of the execution sizes, most of the execution sizes in the dark pools, are actually smaller than what's being executed on the exchange. Now, no market structure needs 40 different shadow exchanges that most people can't access that are not doing anything above and beyond what can be found on the exchanges. And the exchanges are the pricing utility, and you have to, and that pricing mechanism is sacrosanct. You have to protect that. So once you start shining a light and saying, you know, what's the purpose? Why do you exist if you're really not doing anything? You're being competitive with the stock exchange, and you're really not fulfilling your promise of being an institutional trading venue. So, again, regulators around the world are clamping down on this. They've done it in Canada, Australia, and Europe. And they said, look, if you're not providing value, you dark pool, if you're not providing any value above and beyond what can be found on the exchange, if you're not complementary to them, then you should put your volume back on the exchange, and dark pools should be the domain of institutional trading. So offer something that is complementary, a larger average execution size, a much better price improvement, something that institutions would need that they cannot find on the exchanges. And certainly, you know, LiquidNet, our average execution size is anywhere from, you know, 100 times to 1,400 times that found on the very exchanges around the world. And we trade in 44 different countries around the world. So that is a wholesale market. We've delivered on what our goals were to create to provide an institutional trading venue.
Hey, Seth, I want to get back to the book for just a second here. Your book, The Power of Positive Destruction, you looked at Uber, Netflix, and Southwest Airlines, and you studied them to see how they grew their business. Can you give us one thing you learned from any of those companies, Uber, Netflix, and Southwest Air, that can help a future entrepreneur?
There are so many different ways that you can actually go and disrupt an entire industry. You know, the power of positive destruction is about breaking down barriers, tearing down walls, and being able to construct something brand new in the place where, you know, something had previously existed. If you take Uber, for example, you know, the guys that started Uber had no experience in the service industry and certainly nothing in the car industry. And they used technology as a great enabler, and they took examples from other industries and they applied it to something that nobody thought or knew was in need of disruption, or, you know, what I would call positive destruction. They tore down those walls and they said, you know, what is the problem that they wanted to solve? Is that most cities don't have a taxi network. So, you know, if you're traveling a lot or if you're in one of those cities, how do you actually get from place to place if they don't have good public transportation, if they don't have a taxi system? Well, let's take some technology and let's apply it. And, you know, and they made a fantastic business. You know, Netflix also used technology to solve what was a vexing problem. You know, Blockbuster did us an amazing service, and they brought videos to our homes, and that was great. But if you think about it, you had to go out. Half the time that you spent in the entertainment that evening was going out to a Blockbuster, finding a movie, and you know there were walls and walls of these movies, and you had no idea which one was good and which one was bad. Netflix brought that all to your home, and in fact, 75% of the choices that we make on Netflix are recommendations that they make. So we don't have to go through the walls and walls, and we don't have to leave our home. So again, applying technology to an industry that did not know that it needed to be disrupted, you know, many people are simply constrained by what they know or what they're familiar with or what's been done before. The way that you deal with the great companies can take technology, they can see a problem that perhaps no one else did or saw it as a cost of doing business, as I did with LiquidNet. Everyone knew that it was a problem, but they didn't really try to solve it. If you solve that problem, if you can take technology, if you can take examples from other industries, there's another example that I use is Cemex. It doesn't have to be technology even. Cemex is a cement company based in Mexico, and they simply applied just-in-time inventory principles to the cement industry. And just by doing that, they have become the largest cement company in the world. So find a large problem that has to be solved. Figure out how you solve it. That creates your unfair competitive advantage. Package that unfair competitive advantage into a 30-second pitch that is so compelling that your prospects would be absolutely stupid not to buy it, or that they would create an unfair competitive advantage for themselves. And that's how you start a great business.
I always thought personally that going into Blockbuster was part of the fun, but maybe that's just me. Seth Marin, thank you so much for joining us. I'm definitely going to read your book because I remember attending a talk in college with Mark Cuban, and the first question somebody asked him was, I have an idea, now what do I do? And I don't remember what the answer was, so I'm going to read your book and find out what the answer to that question was. Your book, The Power of Positive Destruction, How to Turn a Business Idea into a Revolution. Seth Marin, thank you so much for joining us today, and we will be in touch.
Okay, thanks for having me.
All right, have a good one. All right, Dennis, was that fun for you?
Oh, yeah. You knew I'd be pumped to talk. And we had a jobs number. Look, and I was like so pumped to hear Seth Marin. I was like, almost forgot about the jobs number. So, Spencer, we're going to throw you right back under the bus. What's the number?
The number was non-farm payrolls for January, 227,000 versus 175,000. That was the estimate. The prior was 156,000. The unemployment rate is 4.8% versus 4.7%, and that was the prior as well, 4.7%.
Big left for the market here, you know, 4 or 5 points. We've been seeing muted action on the jobs numbers for a while, but they wanted to come in here and buy them today. We were already trading higher. I mean, it's funny, you know, you have such bad, you know, Amazon numbers last night, and you think, oh, this is going to weigh on the market tomorrow. And it just doesn't, this story seems to be, like I said, a sector picking up the slack. I'll tell you, the financials this morning are absolutely flying. We got JP Morgan trading up 1.5% here right now. We got Citigroup trading up 1.5%. We've got Bank America trading up 2% this morning. Goldman Sachs up almost 4 points here. You're looking at a lot of these financial stocks that are actually going to be within striking distance of their 52-week highs. And just 2 days ago, we were talking about the weakness, you know, how some of these financials had been selling off. And now, all of a sudden, you know, a lot of them are on the comeback trail here. This is a big move here for the financials this morning. Also, a pretty big move for the market. Joel, a little bit. We keep climbing here. S&Ps.
Yeah, I just want to alert our traders that we're knocking on the door. The highs for the week, Monday's high, 22.85.75. We hit 85 and a quarter just moments ago. 85 even was Wednesday's high. So there you go. We gapped down on Friday on some Trumpness. Now we're back up at that level. If, in fact, it takes that out, last Friday's close was 22.89, and then our all-time closing high from Wednesday and Thursday of last week at 22.94. So 8:34 here. We're going to take our second break, and we got a technician to talk to, and that's
nice.
Arthur Hill, Senior Technical Analyst at StockCharts.com. This guy's good. We'll get him right on.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.
Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep, brought to you by Chaikin Analytics. I'm your co-host, Joel Elkanen, along with Dennis Dick and Spencer Israel, working the boards. We have Arthur Hill on the line, senior technical analyst at stockcharts.com, speaking to us from Belgium. Arthur, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very good. Thanks, guys, for having me on.
And you participated in the chart summit last week. How did that go?
Yes, I did. That was a great chart summit that was put together by J.C. Peretz over at All Star Charts. It was a really good lineup. And I did a presentation basically on some long-term timing indicators that you can use as far as breadth indicators, and also how to rank the sectors using breadth indicators. So it went very well.
And tell us about your site, stockcharts.com.
Okay, well, stockcharts.com is offering charts, obviously. We have point and figure. We have sharp charts, which is our main charting engine or workbench. Point and figure charts. We also offer a lot of commentary. We've got John Murphy on, Martin Pring, myself, Greg Schnell, and Tom Boley. We also offer a chart school, which most of it was written by myself, and that covers almost every indicator you can think of, all the indicators that are available at Stock Charts. So you've got, of course, RSI and MACD, and you've got Commodity Channel Index and all kinds of moving averages. So anything you could want to do, you can do it on our site. And also, we have scanning capabilities as well.
And you mentioned at the event, you talked about backtesting, which is always a good thing to do. Could you do that through stockcharts.com?
No, you cannot do backtesting through Stock Charts. So that's something that is on the list of things for the developers to work on. But I wouldn't expect it this year, possibly in 2018, though.
All right, let's get into your trading style here and your method of technical analysis. Let's start with your time frames.
Well, my time frame is the first thing I do is figure out if we're in a bull or a bear market. And that kind of sets my whole trading bias. And I'll use that. I'll use a 50 and 200 day EMA on the S&P 500 and some breadth indicators to just tell me which direction I should be looking. If I'm in a bull market, I'm looking for bullish setups, and I'm ignoring bearish setups, bearish candlesticks, bearish MACD crosses, or even overbought readings.
Are we in a bull market or bear market? Because there's actually a few people that have an opinion because, you know, we've lost some of the leaders here that this is the next bear market starting. Or are we still, you just see, you know, we're pretty close to all-time highs here, just go with the flow, and we still are definitely in a bull market. What's your opinion on this?
I think we're definitely in a bull market. And the way I approach it is, as I said, with the broad market breadth indicators in the S&P 500, and sure, we've got some sectors that have stopped participating in energy, but I don't take approach where I look at the leaders and laggards in the sectors. I kind of take an aggregate look at the sectors, and if 50 plus 1% of the sectors are bullish, then that's more than enough to keep the market going higher. Now, the degree of the advance is questionable, but I still think we're in a bull market, and it's been that way since March.
Jumping over to the individual sectors here, and you know, you talked energy stocks. Let's break it down for the sectors here. First of all, we can start with energy there, but I want to jump into the financials as well because they've been super strong here as of late. But what do you see with the energy? What are you seeing on the technicals?
Okay, well, with the energy, if you look at, we'll just use the XLE because
sure.
I think that's the big one. But, you know, the problem with XLE, of course, is you've got ExxonMobil, which is, I think it's like 15% of the ETF. and Chevron. So you got these two major integrated oil companies dominating XLE. But when I look at this chart, you know, it hit a 52-week high in December. It's been trending up for 6, 7, 8, 9 months. So it's in a clear long-term uptrend. So that sets my bias. All right. So I want to be looking for pullbacks. And, you know, a pullback is like a piece of string. You never know how long it's going to be or how long it's going to last. But when I look at this chart, you can see there was a nice move up in November. And this decline that we've had is kind of retraced about 50% of that advance. And so when you start getting into that midpoint of the retracement, that's when I want to be on alert for a potential upside catalyst to signal that that correction is ending. And it could be ending soon. If you look at the ExxonMobil chart, you can see that that stock, I think the sentiment has gotten fairly bearish on it, but
right.
It is oversold and it's at support. It's right near those September, November lows. And today we might have an inside day forming. And if we can get a pop above 84 and change, then that could signal a short-term reversal off support. So that's what I'd be watching there.
Let's jump over to the financials. Maybe you want to look at the XLF, although I always look at the XLF and think, well, Berkshire Hathaway is a big part of it, and that's not really feel like a financial to me, but everybody follows the XLF for the financials. It's already up significantly in the pre-market. The banks have been jumping back here. And I mean, it's been an impressive move since Trump, you know, got elected back in November. The financials have taken off, some of them to the tune of 25 or 30% here. XLF, give us the technical thoughts there, Art.
Okay, you know, it's funny you mention Trump. I feel like whenever I mention an industry or a sector that might be on the hot seat, I have to put a little disclaimer after it that this analysis could change with 144 characters.
One tweet, everything could change. I'm not repealing Dodd-Frank.
I changed my mind.
So, but when you look at XLF, sure, it's been frustrating over the last few weeks because it's gone nowhere. But nowhere isn't bearish, I don't think. It's just a stalemate between buying pressure and selling pressure. And I would say that, you know, the long-term trend is up, so that favors a bullish resolution. In other words, I wouldn't be looking at, say, you know, if you look back at like January 17th, you had a fairly sizable decline that broke that late December low. Well, that didn't turn out to be very bearish because you still got that long-term uptrend in force. And I would expect this one to break out and go to new highs.
Art, getting a question here from Jamie at Bright Trading. He's asking you, what about your entries? When and how and why do you actually pull the trigger? So you see a good setup here. How do you actually execute?
Okay, well, when you look at the, that XLE, I noted that there was a potential inside day happening. And if you can get a close above that, say, 84.20 level, that would confirm that inside day. And that would be a lower risk entry point. And with XLF, it's a bit different because it's within the middle of a consolidation. And I would be more apt to take a position in that consolidation because if you wait for the breakout at, say, 23.8, you're going to have a higher risk because, you know, where are you going to put your stop? So I'm more of the mean reversion to get it closer to that pullback and catch that knife right off of the bounce, not the breakout.
Art, when we were speaking yesterday, you said that end of day is very important for you, that either you will, you'll look at your trades based on that closing price. You said sometimes you take a little bit of a jump on it, maybe, you know, get in on the close, or you'll wait to the next morning. Explain the reasons behind that.
Well, maybe it has more to do with age than anything else because, you know, I just am not up for watching the market intraday that much anymore. And so I use most of all of my back testing is done with end of day data, closing data. And it's usually with an open on the next day as the signal in the back test. So I will, and a closing price, I think, if you have to pick one price, I think that is the most important price of the day. So it's where the market has finally settled after all the pushing and shoving. So I'm, you know, fine with taking a signal on the close and then executing it on the next open. Now, one thing I did find in the back testing was on weekly testing, if you bought the Friday close, you performed better than if you bought the Monday open. So there seems to be an edge there for weekly traders that are looking to buy on a weekly signal to get that Friday close.
Yeah, because you do. I mean, you do have the markets reacting over the weekend, and in this bull market, how many times have you woken up, see the S&P's 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 points higher, and never really give you a chance to get back in on the closing prices? Going a little deeper here into your methods of technical analysis, you know, what kind of charts do you use? Are you a bar chart? Are you a candlestick? What kind of indicators do you have on your charts?
Well, I put a couple of moving averages. And, you know, the thing about moving averages is forget about finding the perfect pair. I mean, they, you know, you test a moving average on XLE, it's going to look different than if you test that same moving average on XLU, the utilities. They just have different characteristics. But I'm just using them to get a broad sense of the trend and confirm what I'm seeing. And then as far as indicators, I really like the 10-period RSI. And, you know, when I've got my trend indicators bullish and 10-period RSI moves into that 30 to 40 range, then I'm on alert, all right? And I'm watching the charts extra close. And then maybe I'll tie in a candlestick pattern, but a bullish pattern that looks for that catalyst. Or I might do something like a short-term MACD histogram, like a 535 MACD. And then when that histogram turns positive, which means that MACD has moved above its signal line, then that tells you prices are turning up again. And that's, of course, after RSI has moved into that oversold pullback zone. And then I'm looking for that MACD to turn up.
All right.
You know,
I'm sorry.
It doesn't work every time. You have to have a variety of things to try and catch that turn.
All right. Just your overall thoughts here on the market, and we'll let you go. Get ready for the open.
All right. Well, I think it's a bull market. I mean, there's no question about that. And I wrote in a piece yesterday that I thought healthcare was actually perking up because I got a couple of bullish breath signals out of healthcare. And biotechs were also perking up. So they're ones that are moving up in my sector rankings, and I would be watching that group in the coming weeks.
You can catch Art here on our show. We're going to have him back on again. He's also on Twitter. Arthur Hill, Senior Technical Analyst at StockCharts.com. Thanks a lot, Arthur. We'll have you on again soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Art.
S&P's at the highs of the session, 9.5 points, knocking on the high for the week at 85.75. Dennis, what do you see there in imbalance land?
Buy imbalances across the board. They're not huge, but they're fairly significant here. I'm looking. The banks are all going to be strong here today. They're going to be your strongest sector, at least here off the open. JP Morgan, 89,000 to buy. Citigroup, 42,000 to buy. Bank of America, 247,000 to buy. Wells Fargo, 36,000 to buy. But then also looking like a stock like AT&T, 163,000 to buy. Sometimes AT&T can be weaker, you know, in a market like this. I always look, you know, when trading those stocks, usually look more at the TLT. But what is interesting here is not only the financials are rallying, the TLT is rallying here as well. And gold has come back here as well, too. It kind of feels like weird, but it's almost like a buy everything market right now. Like, it wasn't like that before the 830 number, but since the jobs, gold has bounced back and a lot of stocks are now trading in the green across the board. It's hard to find a weak sector here right now. I think retail could still be a little bit weak, you know, obviously at the Deckers and the Amazon bringing it down. So if I'm trying to identify what sector might not participate here, I'd probably point to the retail sector. But across the board here, a lot of buy amounts. Pfizer, 113,000 to buy. General Electric, 154,000 to buy. Even Colgate, 48,000 to buy. And like I said, sometimes the defensive names don't participate, but they look like somebody wants to buy them there at the open.
All right. S&P futures, as I said, trading up 10 points here, 85.50, knocking on the highs of the week. Any earnings reports that we skipped over?
Yeah, we skipped a lot. So we got through GoPro earlier, Amazon, Deckers, but we didn't talk about Visa. Visa had a pretty good report, and the stock is actually trading up near all-time highs here for Visa. Actually, I believe Visa is hitting a new all-time high here. Yes, it is in the pre-market, taking out the 85 resistance area, trading up at 85.75. Spencer, talk to us about these Visa numbers.
Visa reports Q1 GAAP EPS of 86 cents, but that may not compare to the 78 cent estimate. Sales of 4.5 billion versus 4.29 billion, so they beat on that number. They also see fiscal year 17 sales growth at 16-18%.
Big pop here,
yeah,
Joel.
Big pop, new all-time highs. I'll just give you your pre-market high. That comes in at 86.01. Street kind of leading the wrong way into this one. You had a couple down days in a row. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 down days in a row. Now you're back up making a new all-time high. Let's look through some follow-through right near that $86 level, 86.01. That's your pre-market high.
Bring up a 6 or 7 year chart here on Visa. This trend has got to be one of the, if you're a trend trader here, this is one Visa that you could just have ridden this trend for 300% here, because it is pretty much just a straight up line. Draw your purple crayon, like Jeff Mack used to say, all the way up. Look at the 2011 lows down there around $18, and it's just pretty much straight up. You had a couple little blips there, but for the most part, there has not even been, you know, a 10% pullback. The odd time, I guess, you've had a 10, but I don't think you've had a 20% pullback at any time in the last 7 years here in Visa, so it has pretty much been straight up.
All right, Downward Dog wants us to take a look at MKSI. Now, there must have been some kind of news on this one yesterday. You had really a huge range here. Spencer's checking to see if we had any news on it.
Oh, they had earnings.
They had earnings, and they had a wild day yesterday. Some people liked some of the earnings, and some others didn't.
Wow.
Yeah. You almost got a gap fill there, not quite, to the 62.50 area. Now you're 67.60. That was your high from yesterday. That represents your all-time high. Close at 66.90 flat on the day. So, boom, you want to see it just cut through that 67.60. That's the all-time high. Things open up after that. The close at 66.90.
Yeah, just looking, you had the big sell-off off the hop. Must have been the earnings report there, where it sold off $3.50 in the first few minutes. But then over the next hour, got it all back. You know, V bottom there. Now you kind of consolidate here a little bit more. I mean, if you take out the highs here, you're right. Your highs of yesterday, it's all air above.
All right. S&P's did breach that high, went up to 86.50. So working to fill the day gap from Monday, 22.87. Now are we done with all the earnings reports?
FireEye, F-E-Y-E. Oh. It's always a disaster stock of the day, and your security stock that everybody loved, you know, 2 or 3 years ago when the stock was trading. I guess it's 3 years ago now. Time flies. When it was $97 a share, it's now $10. We're at $10.40. Stocks trading down 20% here in the pre-market. Spencer, FireEye numbers.
Q4 adjusted EPS, a 3-cent loss. That's not as bad as the 16-cent loss estimate, though, so that's looking good. Revenue, $184.7 million versus $190 million estimate. They see Q4 revenue at $160 to $166 million. That's $10 million lower than the estimate. And they see EPS at 26 to 28 cent loss. That's worse than the 24 cent loss estimate. So they missed on both in the guidance.
I mean, you're flirting with all-time lows here. 10. Actually, are we making new all-time lows? I believe we are.
Yeah, we are.
We took out the October 1087. These are new all-time lows. $10 psychological level. You know, we talk, Ace always talks psychological levels. We talk them a lot on the show as well. $10, you know, maybe. What's done the pre-market?
10.30, that's your pre-market low. That
okay, right
eclipses
there.
The former all-time low of 10.87. But just trading 9 cents off that number, so I guess it's just do the shorts. I want to come in here and you know, take some windfall here, falling from the $13 area. Just a sector just out of favor, and it's going to be out of favor today as well. Keep an eye on some of your other defense stock or cybersecurity stocks. What's the one with the A? Is it
Which one are you looking for?
Oh, it begins with an A.
Well, there's cyber, but that's not what you're talking about.
No, no. I'm trying to think of... is Arista, is that cybersecurity? A-N-E-T is the one I was thinking. Brentster.
You're thinking
Witness.
Of A-N-E-T. Yeah. Arista Networks.
Yeah.
Brent with a save.
Huh.
I don't know, though. Those are bigger in the sector. Now, FireEye is so small. You think there's going to be sympathy moves here? I'm not sure or not. But,
no.
You know, obviously, you get one down 20%. Maybe there can be.
I don't know. This seems to be the best in breed here. This is near its all-time high, so maybe scratch that from the record. Do we want to do anything on ratings today?
Well, I want to just, before we go to ratings, you know, maybe we'll have to stay an extra minute or two. Chipotle. We have not talked CMG earnings here yet. They reported after the bell. And does this stock just always get a buy? I mean, this report, there was nothing good in this report. Like, give us a number, Spencer. And then me and Joel are going to sit down here and analyze why Chipotle never sells off.
Not a whole lot good here. Q4 EPS, 55 cents. That's 2 cents worse than the estimate. Revenue, $1 billion. Estimate was 1.04, so they missed on both. Although, not by much. They see their fiscal year 17 comp restaurant sales increasing in the high single digits with around 200 new restaurant openings. They did report that Q4 comps were down about 5% and December comps were down 14.7%.
I don't know. There's nothing great in that report. It continues to trade with a pretty high multiple. I mean, everybody's banking that eventually we're going to forget about the E. coli debacle and this thing's going to go back to, you know, $700 a share. I don't think it is, but, you know, what do I know? I mean, I've been bearish the stock. I think we were right earlier because we were bearish down up at 550. It's just, you know, we've come back a long ways from the lows down at 360, 423. You see the thing sell off. I remember doing this last earnings report, too. I felt like it sold off, and then it's within a week and a half, it's right back again. Here it is, only a couple hours. Sells off the initial numbers, which weren't that great. And, you know, it bounces all the way back here, and they're just looking for any reason, it seems like, to buy this stock.
Yeah, big old pre-market range, 405, 55 to 434. Now just hanging up here. So far it has shrugged off the report. Looking at the dailies here, trying to poke your head above 420, and a couple times it did clear that area, but then came back down to it. I'll just give you the recent high of the move, and that was made yesterday at 27.67. We are trading above that. That 440 level, I guess, if it really goes into rally mode, you had some highs.
Yeah,
440, 441.20. Ackman got it up there as well. So another 12, 13 points. But the way some of these stocks move, it could get there in a hurry.
If you want to just jump to earnings quickly here, Ford got upgraded at Barclays. Also, Alcoa upgraded at Bank America here today. Interesting because that U.S. steel move and X, when Bank America upgraded it, it was huge. I mean, I actually had that thing long, and I sold it way too soon. Stock continued to run all day yesterday, closing up almost 3 points. What do you think on Alcoa here? Can you see a similar move in Alcoa, or do you think this is, you know, Alcoa had a little bit of a move yesterday. Maybe it's going to be a little more muted here than the U.S. steel was yesterday.
Oh, yeah, that U.S. steel, and it was interesting. One day after earnings, you know, they come back and defend the stock. We'll see if they can be influential today as influential in Alcoa. Let's take a look at the pre-market action. You up 44 cents at 38.12. I'll give one number for you on, well, 38.94. That was your high back on the 25th, so got some room in the 38 handle. First half to do away with yesterday's high at 38.37. Not quite yet there in the pre-market action, but if the trading activity in X yesterday is any indication, we'll see if Bank America can make a stop move like that 2 days in a row.
Anything else anybody wants to cover before I wrap us up? No? Going once, going twice. All right, we're done. You missed your chance. Looking forward to next week's slate of guests. Got a good one for you. We have Carl Swire on Monday. He's got a company called EquityStat, a nice fintech startup. We're also talking with Ben Axler, Spruce Point Capital. They are a short selling firm. Also, we're going to be hearing from Brad Thomas. He wrote a book about Donald Trump's success as a businessman. And then on Friday, we're chatting with IEX Head of Product, Adrian Ficini. So looking forward to all those guests and more on next week's show. If you missed any part of our show today, catch the whole thing. It's on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Just search for Benzinga or pre-market. Want to remind you once again that today's show is brought to you by Chaikin Analytics with their groundbreaking stock research tools, including the proven Chaikin Power Gauge rating and stock discovery engine. Chaikin Analytics simplifies complex investment decisions and is all presented in an easy-to-understand platform. To learn more, visit chaikinanalytics.com/pre-market. That's Chaikin, C-H-A-I-K-I-N, analytics.com/pre-market. Please remember that all the information, material, and content from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. Hope you all enjoyed today's show and our chat with Arthur and Seth. Have a good rest of your day. Have a good weekend. Good luck to those of you Falcons or Patriots fans on Sunday, and we'll be back with you folks on Monday morning.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.